Remember when your English teacher at school told you you couldn't start a sentence with and or but, or that you should put a comma where you take a breath? Misty Ardonoghue is an associate professor in language, literacy and TESOL at the University of Canberra. She's caused a bit of a storm with an article for The Conversation arguing that all these things we thought were right are actually wrong. Misty, good morning and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Hamish.
I think you're going to cause a tidal wave of Twitter and text coming in about this. But I've read your piece. It's fascinating. Let's start with conjunctions like and or but. Mm-hmm. You say that what we probably think about these conjunctions is not necessarily the rule.
No, and you only need to read any novel to see that great novelists, great writers can start their sentences with and or but, and the sky doesn't fall down. We can do it, but the point is that you do it intentionally. So I have to say that seven-year-olds don't do it intentionally. So they're simply just writing the way they speak, and that's why they say, and then we went here, and then we saw this, and then we came home. So that's not an intentional use of and. But there are plenty of authors out there who will be very effective with the use of a conjunction at the beginning of a sentence. You only need to read a novel to see that that's true.
Before people get up in arms, in your article, you refer to two different schools of thought about the use of grammar. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, so there are two camps. There are the prescriptivists, so those are those people who say that there's one way to write. They prescribe the rule, and that is the rule for all time. And then there are the descriptivists. So they describe how language works for different audiences and for different purposes. So for a descriptivist, at this current point in time, they'll say, you can use a conjunction to start a sentence because we observe that that happens all the time in novels and in poetry and in opinion pieces in the newspaper. But we also observe that at this point in time, you can't start a sentence with and if you're writing an academic journal article. That may well change in 10 years' time, but at this point in time, that's not what happens. So descriptivists describe what's happening with language. They recognise that language changes over time.
And the prescriptivist origins, too, are fascinating.
They are. So really, the prescriptivists only came into their own in the 18th century, and that was really because we started to write books more. There were more people reading, and so a bunch of people decided, well, we should have some rules then to say how these words should be written, how sentences should be organised. And it was actually a few clergymen that seemed to take up the reins on this and sit at home and write up a few grammar books. And so they made up rules that everybody should follow. And they
and in part it was about excluding the working class from language, as it were.
Yes, and that's why they used Latin as their basis for making up their rules, because then those who had learnt Latin were much more likely to be able to use these new rules in their writing of English. And, of course, to have learnt Latin, you would have needed to have been going to a school, and a rich, posh school. And those were actually called grammar schools, and that's the origin of our grammar schools that we have today, in fact. So it was a way of keeping literacy in the hands of the elite.
So what about ending, controversially, a sentence with a preposition?
Yes, the good old prepositions. So prepositions, for those who can't quite remember what they are those little position words like with or from or to or under. And the Latin rule is, in Latin, you can't end a sentence in a preposition. And so that rule was brought across into English. So, for example, I wouldn't be able to say, who did you go to the movies with? I would have to say, with whom did you go to the movies?
Sounds very formal.
It does. And so there's nothing wrong with knowing both of those structures. In fact, it's a good thing to know because, I don't know, maybe you'll have an audience with the Queen, and you'll need to use that more formal structure. But it's not the structure that you would use in everyday talk with people. So what grammar really is about being powerful with your language, being able to make choices according to who you're talking to and what the purpose of your talk is or your writing is.
You also say that adverbs aren't just words that end in ly. I think this is interesting in the context of Donald Trump and his use of ly at the ends of words. Bigly.
Bigly. That was a good one, wasn't it? So it is, look, it's a very wonderful thing about the English language that you can add these little suffixes onto words to make new words, although bigly was an interesting one to make up. But that's not, so that's classically how we do make adverbs, by putting an ly on the end of an adjective. But that's not the only way we make adverbs. There are lots and lots of adverbs in English that don't end in ly. So adverbs are the words that tell us when the verb has happened or why the verb has happened. So that could be words like tomorrow or today, because they tell us when the verb has happened in a sentence.
So can we, put a comma anywhere we want to, despite what we might have been taught in school?
Do you know what I notice about the comma? I notice that once children learn it, and they kind of get the idea of it by the time they're in high school, they forget what the purpose of a full stop is and use commas forevermore. So, commas aren't just the things you put in when you want to take a breath. In fact, if we were putting commas in every time we took a breath, there'd be a lot of commas in our sentences. Commas actually have quite a few functions, but one of their most simple functions is to bracket off something that could be taken away and the sentence would still make sense. And another way to use commas is to kind of demark between like things. So if you've got two adjectives butted up against each other in a sentence, then you would put a comma to mark them off from one another.
This isn't mentioned in your article, but does an emoji or an emoticon have a grammatical construction or rule?
It doesn't yet, but I'm sure somebody's going to write a rule for it. I know that people often wonder, if I'm putting the smiley face at the end of my sentence, does that constitute a full stop, or should I put a full stop after my smiley face? I think at the moment, the descriptivist would say you don't need your full stop after your emoticon, that your emoticon's kind of acting like a full stop. But no doubt a prescriptivist will write a little grammar book for us soon and tell us exactly what we're supposed to do with emoticons.
I do wonder what the original prescriptivist would have thought of the smiley face. Missy Donoghue, thank you very much for your time this morning. I'll leave you to the internet and the flood of responses. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much.
Misty Donoghue is an Associate Professor of Language Literacy and TESOL at the University of Canberra. She's just written an article called Things You Were Taught at School That Are Wrong for The Conversation. It's 26 minutes past 8.